Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
People opt to become vegetarian for various reasons, political or environmental, or they simply don't like meat. But Barbara King suggests yet another reason, the personality of the animal you're eating. She's the author of Personalities on the Plates, The Lives and Minds of the Animals We Eat. Barbara, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Not too bad. When we talk about the personalities that animals can have, do you mean all animals, or is there, if you like, a line below which one couldn't reasonably say that an animal has a personality?
Well, good question. I have discovered that scientists are thinking about animals that include insects and spiders as having personality in a basic sense. You know, we're not talking about a terribly charismatic lighting of a room here. We're talking about differences between, say, being bold and being shy, or being aggressive and not aggressive. But the idea still is that we no longer need to think of insects and spiders as all exactly the same. There's something different about them that is meaningful in their lives. Now, of course, I don't focus mostly on insects and spiders. The bulk of my book is about farmed animals, such as, you know, pigs and cows and octopus and fish.
Yeah, though at the same time, in parts of the world, people eat a lot of insects as food. So don't the same arguments apply?
Well, the same questions apply. I'm not sure if the same conclusions apply. Of course, as you say, insect eating is not only a global phenomenon, but it's also becoming a very popular movement in Europe and in the United States, partly because we're starting to think about how to feed the world protein. Plants, of course, are great sources of protein, but we also need to feed, you know, millions of people more every year. So are insects a good solution or not? And that's where I think my work comes in, to start to ask questions about who we're eating and what their lives are like, to help us make these decisions.
And that would apply then to insects as much as it would, say, to pigs.
Yeah, the questions do. Of course, what I'm saying is that the cognition and emotion of an insect is not going to be comparable to that of a pig or that of a cow. So that's where we have to start deciding where we do want to draw the line. My book is as much about, you know, wanting to engender questions and dialogue and conversation as it is about coming up with answers.
Though I suppose it's about defining what we mean by personality. And if we were to say an insect has a personality and a pig has a personality and a human has a personality, are we taking a very, very lateral interpretation of what personality means?
Well, sure, and I think that's a good thing. It's what I want to do with cognition and emotion as well. I think that having a broad definition is the way to start, and then you can start parsing out differences. You know, evolutionary theory tells us that every species is unique by definition. We evolved with our own species-specific attributes, but that doesn't mean that octopus don't think. They do. And fish think as well. And I think that having a broad definition can help us see these commonalities.
Now, I mean, an octopus is a very interesting example, because I suppose a lot of people wouldn't assume that an octopus was a particularly intelligent creature, but they seem to be.
Yeah, they are. In 2014, there were a group of scientists who wrote up something called the Cambridge Declaration of Consciousness, and in fact, the octopus is the only invertebrate that made the list. In other words, very clearly conscious, thinking, problem-solving, and we see this through tool use, for example. Octopus use coconut shells to make little mobile shelters and carry them along on the seafloor. We know that they can solve problems in the laboratory that are quite complicated in terms of escaping from various Houdini-like situations. And we know that socially they're you know, pretty solitary in most cases, but that they have this incredible ability to solve problems. And in addition, most people know that they can camouflage themselves. They have these chromatophores that change color, so their skin can change color to match the background on which they live. And this is very adaptive for avoiding predators, so they blend into a bush or something. But in addition, these chromatophores change according to their mood. So once again, you can tell something about both emotion and personality by watching these color-coded flashings of octopus, telling us that they have some kind of an inner life.
Does that indicate an inner life? Is there not a constant danger of anthropomorphizing these creatures?
Yeah, you know, I call that the A word because that is the main complaint that people have about my work, anthropomorphism. And of course, the definition of anthropomorphism is that I, or whoever, is inappropriately ascribing human qualities to other animals. And the problem that I have with that is that that means that we think, which is very arrogant, that certain types of thinking or feeling is human. The last book that I wrote before this one was all about how animals grieve, and we know that animals do feel grief and they do mourn. This new book simply broadens the landscape, if you will, and I think it's quite clear that it isn't anthropomorphism because scientists are carefully studying these creatures, both in the natural environment and in the laboratory, you know, using ethograms, that is, clear lists of definitions of what these animals are doing. So it's more that we're letting them tell us what they express, not what they think. We can't know what they think, but what their behavior expresses leads us to know something about their problem solving and their emotions.
Though, isn't that mean animals are doing something that looks like grieving, but we don't know if they think it's grieving. We think it's grieving. Aren't we the ones putting the meaning on it? They're not telling us what that action means.
Well, I think that's what we do with each other, too.
But we have language to do that. Animals don't.
Yes, but thinking is not dependent on language. So here's my argument, that if we look at elephants and house cats and ducks and chimpanzees, they show us from their behavior that they are altering their routines. They are grieving in distress by their body postures, their facial expressions, their failure to eat. And it's really, you have to really work hard, I think, not to see that as grieving. You could go back to, say, early 20th century science that, you know, stripped animals of the ability to feel and to think. But we've moved beyond that in science now. We no longer think that it's just, you know, throwaway anthropomorphism to really recognize that other animals do think and do feel. And of course there's an element of interpretation, but it can be done carefully and scientifically.
Now, and particularly grieving is an interesting one. I suppose a lot of people would know that apes would grieve or elephants would grieve, but chickens also grieve.
Yes, well, in Personalities on the Plate, which is the new book, I talk about chicken compassion and chicken cruelty. In other words, in some cases, chickens will help each other if one is injured. For example, if one becomes blind, one will then clearly act in a distressed and upset way if his or her friend dies, and so on. So, yeah, chickens are very smart. They do have emotional lives. And there's a whole spectrum of chickens. Some are mean, some are nice. It's just a personality difference, if you will.
So is there, if we were to look at the consumption of animals in a strictly moral sense, going back, I suppose, to where we started, you know, is there at some point where perhaps one could say, well, you can't eat this kind of insect or something below that, because you can't really argue that it would have any sort of consciousness?
Yeah, I understand what you're asking, but my goal is not to say, let's draw a line here or draw a line there. It's to present people with information so they can make choices about what they eat using some kind of scientific barometer, if you will. So I don't say, like, for example, I don't eat any meat at all except fish. And that is the place that I am deciding to draw the line. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think fish are very smart and very intelligent. It's just my own personal decision. And so I have eaten some insects. I don't think it's just so much a matter of trying to say, here's what people should do, here's what people shouldn't do, as to say we've trained ourselves to think of some animals like elephants, chimpanzees, and dogs as animals we would never, ever eat, period, in most countries of the world, not all. And yet, we don't ask those same questions about a whole variety of other animals. And now it's time to get serious about asking those questions.
So if so many animals are intelligent, if they can display a range of emotions, if they seem to have an interior life, why do those animals eat other animals?
Well, you know, we evolved a large brain in the human evolutionary lineage to be able to think in different ways. There's no question about this. I am, after all, an anthropologist, and I do want to acknowledge that humans are not just like every other animal, we do have unique abilities. And one of those unique abilities is to think with compassion and to think with perspective taking in a very profound way. So I think that we can understand the harm and the cruelty that is inflicted upon other species in ways that, for example, other predators don't. I mean, we don't have a chimpanzee thinking about what it means to hunt and kill a monkey. We don't have a leopard thinking about what it means to hunt and kill an antelope. They're simply evolved to do that. I'm sorry, but we're not carnivores, and we don't have to think in that way. We don't have to be limited in that way.
Barbara, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's Barbara J. King. She's Chancellor Professor of Anthropology at William & Mary University in Virginia in the States. She's also the author of Personalities on the Plate, The Lives and Minds of Animals We Eat.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.